Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Going good. Where's the tin of chocolates that you keep denying me? It's not there anymore.
There's no chocolates.
There was.
No. No, they're licorice all sorts.
Oh, that would do too.
Yeah.
That had hit the spot. I just noticed that the can's missing. Oh, it's down there.
Oh, yes. Things get moved. Things get eaten. Things get moved.
It's like, where's that candy that he keeps not sharing with me?
How come it's never, hey, where's that bottle of whiskey that you never share with me?
I have to drive. I can't drink whiskey.
Well, you can sniff the cap.
I could sniff the cap.
How come, where's that bottle of whiskey never lets me sniff the cap?
I can always eat candy.
I don't even know if it's opened yet or not. I haven't opened it, so apparently not. Better not. It could be empty.
It could be. The cats are getting into it.
Yeah. Oh, don't even talk to me about the cats. The one cat who apparently has a cardiac issue.
Yes. Tracy was telling me.
Yeah. One of the HR cats there has a cardiac issue. So he's on 3 pills a day and for the rest of his life.
Wow. Expensive pets.
Oh, dude, you have no clue. No clue. Like, yeah.
Like, did they give him a expected timeline lifespan?
I shaved his belly to look for an expiry date. There's nothing there.
Nothing there.
Looked on the bottom of his foot, along his tail. No, there's no expiry date on this. They said every animal is different. If they didn't catch it, there wouldn't be much of an expiry date left.
Mm-hmm.
But because we caught it and he's on medication to help treat it, then... Your guess.
Flip a coin. Imminent heart failure. What's his blood pressure?
No idea.
Hmm.
He's got blood.
I would assume so.
I guess it's just one of the 4 chambers of the heart isn't pumping properly.
Yeah.
And they say when that happens, it can force fluids into the lungs, which would explain
his breathing issues.
All the breathing issues, what they thought might be... asthma, the gurgle purr that he was doing. Sounded like he was purring, but it was a gurgly type purr.
Yeah.
Well, that was the fluid in the lungs.
So now probably fluid around the heart, too. Yeah.
So all of this is now being cleared up with these medications. And
his ankle swollen?
And he complains all the time. My ankles are swollen.
Does he have cankles?
Cankles. Does this fur make my ass look fat?
Poor cat. Poor little guy.
He is, but... Yeah. He's on a couple... Three different medications a day now for the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And if he scratches me one more time, maybe sooner than later. But you know what? Now that we're getting him fixed up, the 2 cats have gotten... They've changed all the places they're sleeping in the house now. Even Helios has changed his mannerisms and things he's doing now. Dog's still an idiot, but... When you mix a German Shepherd and a Husky, that tends to be what you're getting. But, yeah. Yeah. Is what it is.
Yep.
My wallet and I are just not on speaking terms, that's all. Oh, and another lovely thing we found out.
Uh-oh.
You'll find out one day. We always rolled our property taxes into our mortgage.
Oh, yes.
So the banks always paid our mortgage.
Yeah. Well, they paid your taxes.
Or paid our
taxes. They take a little extra out and then pay your taxes.
And then they pay our taxes for us. Guess who got his very first property tax?
Don't!
Sweet bejeebus, let me tell you. I knew it was expensive because you get the one at the end of the year, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, oh, yeah, this much is due, like, in a month.
I've never. Really? The bank's always done it for me, so I've never.
Yeah.
I don't even know what my property taxes are.
You just stick with that. Mind you, our house, the estimate on our house, what they say it's worth, has more than doubled.
There you go.
Yeah. So maybe I'll sell the house to pay my property tax. That's how it works, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's how it works.
Yeah, it's been an interesting week. Was hoping to get out and do some paddling on the weekend. That didn't happen. But already John Brower there, he decided he's going to go out. And he loaded everything up, went down, I guess, and...
Duffins Creek?
No, he was going out Pickering Beach Road.
Oh, okay,
there's
yeah.
There's a little park there we ditch out of there sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, yeah, it was like the shore ice was like 3 feet down to the lake.
Oh, wow.
So he says, yeah, he didn't go. Yeah, trying to find launching spots this time of year are a bit.
It is tough. It's with that we've had a lot of high winds and cold temperatures,
mm-hmm.
so it just keeps building up the ice on the shore, just yeah. in these mountainous cliffs of snow of ice.
It's great to have all the gear to go paddling in the winter, but if you can't actually get to the water, mm-hmm. kind of defeats the purpose. I am looking at a few pairs of. Better, warmer winter paddling boots.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. And probably a size or two bigger to fit a couple extra. Because I find that's the thing that gets cold the most is my feet.
Yes.
Right?
Well, you're sitting in a single position. You're not moving. Yeah. So you're kind of restricting blood flow. Plus, you're just not moving and your feet are in basically in the cold water.
And I want to get something that is like Velcro straps or something like that as opposed to the laces.
Nothing laces, yeah.
Yeah.
When you're wearing gloves.
Astros have, yeah.
Yeah. Nothing you can't. Yeah. You need Velcro when you have gloves.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll keep the Astros for my winter or my summer paddling shoes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm looking at getting a new pair of winter paddling boots. NRS has a pair. I can't remember what they were called though, but apparently they're quite good. But they go up like up your calves.
Oh yeah,
they're not just a shoe. They're like
a tall boot.
Yeah, yeah. So
and they still have to be small profile because you still have to jam your feet inside.
Well, you got a good pair or two of socks, heavy socks.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got the dry suit,
yep.
which, you know, takes up space. Mm-hmm. Then you got to put your foot in the boot
yep.
with all that underneath it. Yeah.
And it needs to have a tread.
A wider.
It needs to have some sort of tread on it. So that takes up a bit more.
Yep. So the winter boots I have for snowshoeing will seem to work. Suddenly got this, but winter paddling. So yeah, that's my. I think going to be my next. That and pack from Recreational Barrel Works.
Oh yes, yep.
So yeah, I'm going to be spending a bit more money. My God, I feel like I should be a bank. I need a sugar daddy. Apparently, the sugar mommy I've got isn't giving me enough. Oh man. But, yeah, looking at, everything coming up, I've got my calendar ready to go to start filling in different day paddles and stuff mm-hmm. like that over the summer, spring, summer, fall, doing a whole year of paddling
okay.
sort of thing. So starting to write down, hey, I want to go check this out, check this place out, this place. And, of course, there's a lot of places you want to check out that you can't until
absolutely,
the ice disappears, you know. Yeah. But, I mean, if you find a place to launch, I mean, there are nice days out on Lake Ontario and stuff like that. And I was even going to take the canoe pole last weekend and, close to shore too,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you got all the ice that's there, but do it close to shore and do some canoe poling along the shoreline. Do some, just something a bit different.
Yeah.
Right? Hit some of the tributaries up, see how far I can get.
I'm trying to think of a location that might be, like, if you had a natural harbor somewhere, then, well, see, those are freeze up, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Bougainville Harbor, Toronto Harbor,
Liverpool,
all of those, Newcastle Harbor, Frenchman's Bay, they'd all freeze up.
Mm-hmm.
And anything that is shoreline facing, like, I know at work we get so much wind, it's just, like, there's a little bay with a dock, and if it's cold enough and windy for long enough, we usually get like a 12, 15-foot high mound of iceberg that grows in that little harbor.
And that's exactly what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So you say you got a bay with a dock? Do you ever sit on that dock in the bay?
Down by the bay. Down by the bay.
So we'll see what happens. Lots going on this year, it seems. There's already a couple announcements of people trying to do big trips,
mm-hmm.
expeditions.
I'm trying to plan one.
Oh,
trying
yeah? Trying to.
I got a new boss, so.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
She has different ideas of how much time people should have.
Oh. So. Ew.
Yes.
Well, time to change her mind.
Well, I need to reach out to HR tomorrow and say, hey.
By the way.
What is the actual rule?
Anyway. Does your company have the no beating up fellow employees rule?
Doesn't every company have
that? I don't know. I know. I keep going to my boss. I walk by his office some days after somebody's just totally ticked me right off. I'll stick my head. Hey, just curious. Do we still have the no slapping other employee rule? Yes. Damn it. I walk on. One of these days, he's going to go, no. I got to go warm up my hand. There's going to be some slapping.
Yeah.
10,000 miles, 8 to 10 months, zero support boats. Ohio resident is attempting to become the first American woman to paddle across the Pacific Ocean solo.
We're running out of firsts, eh?
Yeah. Yeah. Katie Spotts, world-class endurance athlete. And if you go to her website, which I'll talk about later, there's like so many things this woman does.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Endurance athlete is already paddled across the Atlantic Ocean. First person to swim the entire length of the Allegheny River. And she'll attempt to paddle herself across the Pacific Ocean. 10,000-mile journey will take approximately 8 to 10 months to complete. We'll take spots from Peru to Papua New Guinea. She's attempting the voyage in order to raise money and awareness for clean water initiatives, which is cool.
Yeah.
One Drop Matters donation page says in December 2026, endurance athlete Katie Spotts will set out to row 10,000 miles solo across Pacific Ocean, aiming to break the record for the longest nonstop ocean row in history and become the first American woman to row the Pacific solo.
Hmm. Peru to Papua New Guinea.
Journey is more than a world first. It's a mission to help bring clean water to 100,000 people in Fiji and beyond. So that's the One Drop Matters charity. So definitely have to keep an eye on this to see how it does progress. She's not starting it till the end of this year, but it's going to be all this stuff that builds up to getting her there. If you go to her website, Katie Spotts, Katie Spotts is SPOTZ.com. You'll see tons of events that she's participated in. Triathlons, marathons, Ironman competitions, ultra runs, biking across South America, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Professionally unemployed.
Endurance athlete. Yeah. If I had known before I started my career of eating donuts that this was something you could do for a living,
I know, right?
I probably wouldn't have eaten as many donuts.
Does it say how old she is?
I do not know.
She's very accomplished. Mm-hmm. She's done a lot of stuff.
I kind of think she's maybe in her 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hmm. But yeah, she's done a whole lot of stuff. So, yeah, katiespots.com. Check all that out, and you can find a whole bunch of different links to different things she does, socials and stuff like that. But if you can't wait until the end of 2026...
She's 39.
Is she 39? Well, I was right. She's in her 30s.
Mm-hmm.
If you would have asked me this question next year, I would have been wrong. But for the meantime, I was right.
Yes.
A couple years ago, the Mississippi River speed record fell.
Yes.
Right? Do you remember that one?
So...
Scott Miller and those guys? Well, four guys... calling themselves the Missouri River Speed Record. June 2026, they plan to paddle the 2,341 miles of the Missouri River faster than anyone has ever done it before. The existing speed record is 33 days, 18 hours, 45 minutes, set by Verlin Kruger and Steve Landick, May 2nd to June 4th, 1980.
That's a long time ago.
The minute you say 19, yeah, that's a long time. That was last century. I think my great-great-grandpappy was born back then. That's like 46 years ago now.
That's a long time.
For a record like that to stand.
Mm-hmm.
But I think more records like this are going to start falling because it's more of a thing now to do.
It is. And we see it with a lot of stuff. People are getting more and more into this outdoor adventurism and races.
Breaking records.
And so on. Yeah, so you're seeing a lot of it. A lot more people are interested in the outdoors. There's been resurgence in the last half decade. So you're going to start seeing more of this.
There's a lot of these record things that I come across when I'm doing research that I don't even talk about.
Mm.
But there's some that are like, you know, these guys have done this sort of thing before and whatnot. So they will be working with the Missouri River Relief as a nonprofit partner and Winona Canoe as the official canoe sponsor. All four of them were involved in some way with the team that sent the Guinness World Record for fastest paddle down the Mississippi in 2023. During that trip, over 1 million people followed along via Facebook page. And they say, if you can help us buy food for our support crew and paddlers by making a donation, we really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I should try that. If you can give a donation to me to help pay my taxes.
Pay my taxes and donut.
And donut bill. We'd really appreciate it. you can read more about the four of them, Scott, Kurt, and Lada, their support crew, the Missouri River, the existing record, and their sponsors and partners at MissouriRiverSpeedRecord.com. I'm sure we'll talk a bit more about this before it actually happens in June. It's already February, by the way.
I know. See, the good thing about crowdfunding with something like this is, well, for one, it's expensive to do an event like this. So they do have sponsors with canoe and so on. But with the support crew, it's really hard to. It's expensive to do something like this, especially if you have a support crew.
A month.
Yeah.
These people are gonna, they got to sleep somewhere. They got to eat. They got to pay money for gas.
Exactly. There's going to be a lot of stuff to cover. And what's good about crowdfunding is that if you just gave a dollar and a million of you gave a dollar, it's nothing off your back, but it gives them $1 million, right?
Also gives me a lot of donuts. $1 million worth of donuts.
But you don't need a lot of people to, it helps out with doing some of these massive adventures.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they'll throw some of their own money in, but a little extra little bit always helps.
Mm-hmm.
And for unexpected things, like 33 days of that truck going, you know, your vehicle supports going,
food and
one of them breaks down, you've got money to fix it, that sort of stuff, right? And, you know, there's some of them that are, you know, any extra money goes into the charity there. You know, they can throw the rest of the extra money at the charity at the end of the day, right? When everything's paid for, so. Speaking of extra money going to charities, so you sent this one to me, which this has to do with a mountain rescue, but it could.
But it's a rescue.
It's a rescue that could happen out on a lake, the ocean, somewhere. Late last month, two young male hikers were attempting to climb England's tallest peak, 3,209-foot Scafell Pike.
Which is not really that tall, but it is England.
It is England. They got lost in treacherous winter conditions and called for help. The Westdale Mountain Rescue Team responded to the incident, beginning a 7-hour operation that ended with the rescue team leaving the hikers at Westdale Head Inn, where the inn provided a 35% discount to support the duo. Then the hikers skipped out on their bill.
It's like, come on, guys.
In a statement by the mountain rescue team, they wrote, the two had already agreed to pay, but their money was in their tent somewhere high on the fell near Green Gable. Disappointingly, in the morning, they offered no thanks for the efforts of the hotel, asked for further reductions to the cost, pushed hard for breakfast, and asked if they could arrange transport to get them out of the valley. Sadly, there has been no payment to the hotel bill on the £130 outstanding room cost. 130, that's like $260.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think so.
While the hotel didn't ask the rescuers to make up the missing money, Wasdale said it paid the bill because it didn't want to risk its relationship with the establishment in case it needs the hotel's cooperation in the future. Which is true, because all it takes is one bad apple, one bad incident to, you know, say, no, you guys did this to me before, and they skipped out on the bill. It cost me £130 plus, and that was after the discount.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah.
So
it's an expensive hotel, but it's a sounds like it's a high end hotel. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's $242.
Yeah,
it's an expensive hotel. Yeah. But hey, they were rescued from a mountain, and they had to have a place to stay. They got rescued. They got off the mountain at like 1 or 2 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And so they found a hotel for them. Hey, guys, here you go. It's what else do you want, right? We're not going to get you back to your tent, right? So,
well, and that's the part I don't get is they said their wallets and everything were money were up in the tent, still up there.
Yeah.
So did they go back up, get it, and then skedaddle?
Exactly, yeah.
Or is their stuff still up there? Rescuers have been unable to make contact with the hikers via the phone number they provided, making it impossible for them to seek out payment for the inn and recover two headlamps the duo borrowed during the descent back to the trailhead. Rescues on Scaffold Pike are not uncommon due to the peak's sharp terrain and navigation requirements, and some estimates suggesting that nearly 100 people call for help every year. You think at that point, they're going to have some sort of test.
Well, what is it? We were there when we paddled our five Great Lakes. The bears...
Oh, Sleeping Bear Dunes.
Sleeping Bear Dunes.
Yeah.
So they have a sign at the top of the hill. You can run down the hill and go touch water, but a lot of people can't make it back up because it's so steep.
You have to pay for that helicopter lift out.
Yeah. Well, actually, I was looking into it like today. I just looked into it today. When you get rescued there,
yeah,
they send a couple people with a cart. And so those two people will, one will push, one will pull, and walk you back up to the top.
Oh, the ones I've seen have all been helicopter rescues.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and the helicopter comes over, they lower a rope, they lower a guy with a rope and a vest.
That should be more than $3,000.
Hook the guy up. It's not cheap.
Mm-hmm.
They hook him up, and then they lower the rope for the other helicopter tech and hoist him up, and off they go. See, that's why I said, and I said it when we were there, the only way I'm going down that hill is if I'm sitting in the canoe.
Slide down.
And I'm sliding down.
I'll paddle
and I'm
to the
hitting
beach.
That water at the end. And I'll just paddle to a different beach.
That's not a bad idea.
Right?
Huh. We'll probably crash and roll and break the canoe in half, but I think it's worth a try.
Right? I don't think there'd be a problem. You get a good sturdy boat. It hit the water at the end.
You'd have to be screaming all the way down. Out of the way! Out of the way!
Oh, no, you know what you do?
you run people over.
No, you pick you out. Here you coming. No, they just you hit them, they end up in the boat. You pay a couple of people that are going down,
mm-hmm.
a couple of kids or something, build a ramp at the bottom.
We want to jump.
And then when give them $10 or something. And or you tell them, when you come back up, I'll pay you when you get back.
Yes.
And then as they're climbing back up, just before they get there, you go ripping down.
Yeah.
Right on. Our $10! Then you hit that ramp, and then you end up hitting the water flattish.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to nose first.
And nose first, burying the nose into the lake.
So you get just enough of a ramp at the bottom to get you to sail a little bit straight out over the entrance to the water.
That'd be wild, eh?
And then you just paddle down the lake to where your
car
is. Back to
the beach where you parked the car.
Right? Easy peasy lemon squeezy.
I bet people have done it.
Right?
I'd put money on it. I bet people would have done this. Yeah. Take a whitewater like kayak down or something.
Sounds like a day trip for
yeah. I can feel a plan forming.
Get like a few boats.
Mm-hmm. race
down like a luge, a 3-4 canoe route luge down Sleeping Bear Dunes into the lake.
That'd be a hoot.
That would be awesome.
Make sure we have some cash in case one of us falls and breaks our leg.
Make sure we have insurance. Yeah.
Yeah.
What? How was your day trip to Michigan? Well, it didn't quite go as planned. But I never knew Derek's leg could bend that way. I don't think he did either with all the screaming that was going on.
We took out a whole family on the way down.
We made that jump at the end. Somebody yelling, "Free Willy!" That'd be awesome.
If we had only thought about that when we were there in the first place.
Right.
Because we had a canoe with us.
Yeah, but you need somebody to shuttle the truck over.
Yeah.
So anyway, back to 100 people call for help every year. That seems a bit, at some point you got to start putting in some tests or something.
Or something, yeah. Yeah.
Incidents are often volunteer intensive, since carrying a stretcher down the peak takes about 16 people.
Mm.
The Mountain Rescue says it's very uncommon for hikers to express anything other than gratitude once they've returned to
safety.
Exactly.
You just got rescued. Why wouldn't you be thanking them?
Right? Like, if I'm getting rescued, the first thing I'm thinking is, I wonder how I can screw these people over. Like, why would you do that?
I know.
In an attempt to encourage the hikers to cover their debt, the Mountain Rescue wrote a post which quickly went viral. While the hikers have yet to connect with the rescuers, the post's popularity quickly gained traction across social media, resulting in more than £5,000 worth of donations to the rescue department. Some of the donations coming from places like Australia and the United States.
Nice.
10,000 or 5,000 pounds is like 9,000.
Something like that, yeah.
600, somewhere in there, Canadian dollars.
Mm-hmm.
The community generosity has left rescuers dumbfounded, with the Mountain Rescue team saying that the excess will go towards the team's operation costs, which typically equate to about £100,000 annually.
Perfect.
So just going and say, you know, having that extra money left over will probably go to the charity or something. Well, in this case, it goes to the Mountain Rescue because people are just throwing the money going, hey, you know what? Those guys were. Yeah, why would you do that? There's been a lot of questions like that we've had over the last six, eight months.
What is going on in your head?
Yeah. Like, who does stuff like that?
Yeah, it's for as far as being rescued, it's like, so they potentially saved your life. They got you out of a bad spot, a bad situation. I don't know why you would be shaking hands and giving hugs all around saying, thank you very much, I appreciate everything you've done. But
see
no.
You suckers.
Yeah, they just like, oh, nice headlamps, I'm keeping them.
Yeah.
And we're not paying that hotel bill.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Absolutely unbelievable. I'd be so angry with that.
I think I'd be mostly disappointed. It's like, humans suck.
Right? I would go find them and take them back up.
Put them back up on the mountain.
like put some sort of restraints that will, like, they can get out of easily enough, but not till you're long gone.
Roofie them and
so then they gotta get down themselves. The yeah, wake up back in their sleeping bag in the tent.
Hey, what's going
right?
on?
Farther up the mountain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah. What happened? Yeah, that's just.
Yeah, it's very disappointing.
That's just disappointing.
Yeah. It just goes to show you can't predict or control human nature or negative reactions of people. And
so let's talk about some good stuff that are happening. There's a lot of things we've been talking about and will be talking about. A lot of environmental stuff, a lot of education, a lot of getting people on board with sustainability and that sort of stuff, right? United Nations Institute for Training and Research, UNITAR. Now, if you put a D on there, you get a unitard.
Yeah, but, yeah. It's my dancing pants.
I don't want to see you in a unitard. UNITAR is a dedicated training arm of the UN system established in 1963, headquartered in Geneva, Switzerland, provides learning solutions, capacity development, and specialized training in diplomacy, peace, security, and environmental sustainability to individuals, governments, and organizations to support the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development.
Hmm.
Whew, that's a big...
Yeah, that's a mouthful. Yeah.
Right? One of their focus areas is activities cover areas like UN procedures, climate change, chemical and waste management, peace building, and sustainable development. The UN is adding paddling, or sorry, is using paddling to promote sustainability at the Olympics. We talked about the ICF World Slalom Championships.
Yes,
with the platypus.
Did we already talk about this? But no, this is a different
platypus.
Yes.
The platypus is zzzzzz.
Platypi.
As opposed to platypi, it's platypuses. Partnership aims to incorporate paddle sports into UNITAR's efforts at leveraging sport as an enabler of sustainable development goals. For example, when it comes to bolstering urban resilience and sustainable city planning, Olympic canoe slalom venues, both past and present, serve as key locations for these initiatives. Working in collaboration with UNITAR, we will be able to achieve our sustainable development goals, partnering on waterway protection and restoration initiatives. Sharing our expertise, we will create interactive training courses to build important knowledge and awareness in areas such as environmental and water safety for athletes, coaches, events organizers, and emergency services personnel, says the ICF Vice President Louis Rabinenda.
Rabinenda?
Rabinenda. Yeah. I can never say his name. There's too many vowels.
He's got two L's in his name.
His first name, yeah. UNITAR is a dedicated training arm of the United Nations, providing innovative learning solutions to individuals, organizations, institutions to help shape a better future. As part of this collaboration, the ICF and UNITAR will develop training programs on the SDGs within the realm of sport, incorporating programs such as dedicated paddlers for disaster response initiative. Under UNITAR's guiding hand, the ICF will leverage whitewater centers to deliver world-class safety training, environmental education, and community outreach programs. Collaborating on waterway protection, restoration, and paddle sport safety initiatives, the ICF and UNITAR will enhance flood preparedness and water safety training for athletes, volunteers, and emergency services personnel. Both parties will share resources and best practices to create guidelines and training content. So when the Olympics are done, you have all these facilities.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
So why not use them?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Sharing common goals and objectives is in sustainable development, the ICF and UNITAR will implement impactful training initiatives to athletes, coaches, officials, and wider stakeholders. Whitewater venues continue to act as powerful catalysts for positive change in societies, offering huge potential to balance community engagement and social foster inclusive, safe, and sustainable communities, as well as support sport delivery from recreation to Olympic-level competition. Because that's the thing is, when the Olympics are done, everything just seems to be, well, okay, well, we got this fancy new.
Yeah.
If you can get
a practical way to use these expensive facilities.
Yeah, and these global agencies getting together and say, hey, let's actually do something with this. That'll help everybody. These special facilities play a significant role in promoting citizen welfare, generating economic growth, and accelerating climate and environmental objectives. Beyond making social environmental impact, sport also serves as a unique platform for diplomacy, acts as a universal language that encourages dialogue, strengthens cross-cultural understanding, and opens pathways for diplomatic cooperation. Approach aligns closely with the recommendation in the International Olympic Committee's Olympic Agenda 2020 plus 5 to strengthen the role of sport as an important enabler for the UN Sustainable Development Goals. This partnership is not just about enhancing sports diplomacy, it's about inspiring leadership, fostering positive change, and empowering communities and athletes through sports. By joining forces with the ICF, we aim to create meaningful opportunities for dialogue, collaboration, and development that align with the Sustainability Development Goals, says Rabi El-Haddad, Director of UNITAR's Division for Multilateral Diplomacy. So it sounds like they're getting on board with all this.
And yes.
I like the idea that they're using these big events to help educate people.
Yeah.
Even during the Olympics and stuff. And like we talked about before, at the World Slalom Championships, you got all these people there to see it. If you throw out a little educational seminar or something like that, people are going to come and see it and go, oh, I didn't know that, especially with the platypus.
Yeah.
But, you know, I could be biased on that one.
Yeah.
So being able to say, hey, like, here's what we're looking at doing with this, and here's this and this and this, and here's why we're doing this, and here's what we're hoping to achieve, and educate people that are there. Say, hey, you guys are here. You paid your money. So come in. See what we're looking
something.
At doing. Learn something while we're there.
Because there's always lots of time between events and stuff.
For
tourist stuff to go on and learning to go on. So, and then post-event or whatever, like outside of the Olympics, continue using these facilities for public education and training and so on.
Mm-hmm. So it'll be cool to see what they keep doing with all this. Hopefully it all comes to fruition. I was talking with my daughter. Because apparently it's my contract, I have to. She sent me a message saying she was looking at different winter festivals to check out in Hokkaido. There are so many. Everybody's holding winter festivals. Like, if you go online and look at Sapporo,
Is that how you pronounce it? I don't know how to pronounce
it. Yeah, that's how you put Sapporo. That's how she pronounces it, so she's got to be right.
So it's not Sapporo.
No, I think that's the English-sized version of the beer, Sapporo. Anyway. Sapporo has a massive ice sculpture thingy there. She goes and sees. There's a lot of smaller ones as well. Like, even her town does one that there's some pretty cool looking sculptures and stuff like that. Her and a couple friends are looking to go to Abashiri, which is on the coast of Hokkaido, to their winter festival. There's a couple other places. There's one place they're going to go before that, just up the coast from it.
Okay.
It's got a giant crab claw statue. And there's where she went and they see the seals. It's this seal education place.
Mm-hmm.
So they take seals that have been injured and stuff like that that can't go back into the wild.
Mm-hmm.
And they use them for educational purposes. And so you can get your picture taken with a seal. I don't think you're allowed to touch them or anything like that, but you can stand next to it and the seal will sit there and you get your picture taken with it and that sort of thing, right?
Speaking of winter there, like, I keep seeing more and more about, like, some of the mountainous areas are getting hit so hard with so much snow.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Buried.
What we had here, they got more.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so she's just... There's like walls of snow separating the parking spots where she's like, I mean, granted their cars aren't all that big anyway, but like the snow drifts are like twice as high as her car. it's brutal. She sends us pictures or if we're sitting there talking, she'll show us outside her building, that sort of thing. Yeah. There's a lot of snow in, just south. A couple hours south of her on the coast, like on the southern coast of, and I can't remember the name of the place. On the southern coast of Hokkaido is like one of the snowiest places on the planet.
Oh, yeah.
And they just get hammered.
Hmm.
Well, you got to remember they had the Sapporo Olympics, right?
Yes.
Right? So it was all snowing and snow stuff and skiing and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, at this Abashiri Winter Festival, the Drift Ice Festival.
Yeah.
So they do a couple-day festival to celebrate the drift ice coming from Russia.
Oh, okay.
So they have this thing called the Drift Ice Kayak Pulling Competition. It's an extreme winter event held at the Abashiri Drift Ice Festival. Teams navigate kayaks through sea ice and slush. Unique high-intensity competition is often filmed for TV, featuring participants maneuvering in the frozen scenic Sea of Okhotsk. Key aspects of the competition. Location: events takes place in Abashiri, Hokkaido, Japan, during the annual festival that celebrates the arrival of drift ice from Russia. The activity is the participants, or pullers, must navigate kayaks through or potentially pull them over the packed ice, requiring significant physical strength and endurance. It is considered a niche, specialized winter sports activity, often highlighted in local media such as STV, Sapporo Television Broadcasting.
Mm-hmm.
For those looking for similar, more established winter paddling, the Quebec City Carnival Ice Canoe Race, which we've talked about recently,
yes,
involves similar challenges of navigating, rowing, and sometimes pulling canoes across ice-filled waters. But now you get this drift ice, and if the wind's blowing, it all moves, right? They also, you can also pay, go on a guided trip there. They get you in full immersion suits and everything set up. And they take you on guided walks across the drift ice. And sometimes you fall in, and then you get hauled out. But there's not a lot of video I can really find or more information about the event itself, except it's, I wouldn't want to be sitting in a kayak paddling through all this snow and stuff, and then all of a sudden have to try to stand up in a kayak, get out on the drift ice, drag it over, get back in, and continue on. Because it's not like you can really stand up and see your route going through the drift ice, right? So it sounds like it's pretty cool. So if you manage to get down there, she's hoping they're going to get there. Definitely send some pictures and some video so I can post on our Facebook page. And so hopefully she's going to get there. And now she's told her friends, because I was talking to her this morning, saying, yeah, we're going to talk about this tonight. And she says, okay, I'm going to tell my friends we have to go now because you guys are talking about it. Yeah. Yeah, Dad, give me an excuse to get them to go. Okay, oh, there's your excuse. All I am is an excuse to her. So that'll be cool to see that, though.
And I don't know when it is, but I assume it's soon.
This weekend.
So this weekend is also the Carnival in Quebec. So the race starts, the races and the Quebec Carnival, Quebec City is starting this Friday.
Well, if you're going to one, if you're going to the one in Quebec City, hit it on Friday. Mm-hmm. Because that gives you time to fly to Japan, get up to Hokkaido, and see the other one.
Yeah, so the Quebec City Carnival and all the ice canoe races, it all runs from February 6th through 15th.
Hmm. Are you going?
No.
Why not?
I've got work.
Works for chumps. Anyway, yeah, so we'll find out next week what... If she gets there on the weekend, then next weekend I'll
release, very cool.
Sorry, this weekend, probably Monday or something, I'll throw some photos up and
That'd be cool. Some.
Yeah. For safety when we're paddling,
I thought this one was cool. I might be getting one of these
for the price. I'd probably get one. We like to bring a spare paddle along when we're canoeing. Hey. On our canoe trips, we end up carrying there around a full length,
and it never gets used.
Yeah, they never get used. You bring that one, and well, mind you, I bring my deep water custom paddle
because
I don't use that on rocks and rivers and
shallow. You care for it, yeah.
Yeah. So realistically, that's my spare.
Yes.
Because then the other one that I do use on rocks and missing chunks out of it and stuff like that, that's so I always have two paddles.
Yes.
Hopefully, not
as
one,
we should.
One never breaks. So yeah, but usually we're carrying around a full length canoe paddle that never gets used, as you say. Fox 40 has an alternative. Now, Fox 40, I've always known them because of their whistles,
yes,
and their orange safety canoe safety yep. buckets, right, that you screw off the top of the bucket.
It's got ropes and there's whistle rope and whistle,
all the safety stuff you're supposed yeah. to have in there. They have a telescopic paddle that can be used as a backup or safety paddle.
Hmm.
Its telescoping paddle is lightweight with an aluminum shaft, adjusts to varying lengths with a quick twist of the paddle of the handle. Simple locking device ensures that extended handle remains in place while paddling. Comfortable handle for a great grip. And it's like a T-grip on that one.
Yes, whitewater.
High-impact molded plastic blade with corrosion-resistant shaft. Includes sturdy boat hook for retrieving items dropped overboard. So I'm looking, where's the boat hook?
It'd be the handle.
Oh, it's the handle. Because the handle, the T-handle is curved.
Yeah.
So you can use that. They're also saying to turn that upside down and use it to push off of rocks and trees yeah. and stuff like that, as opposed to using the blade. Compact, so you can store it under your boat seat or storage compartment. Measures 21 inches, so less than 2 feet. When it's folded up, or 42 inches at full length. So, I mean, okay, if you use a 52-inch paddle.
Yeah. Yes, it'll do.
It'll do. It's better than no paddle.
And be handy from mm-hmm. my perspective. I've got young growing children who they are, like Beckett is going to be using a small size paddle. And
right.
I'm looking for one for him now because he's outgrown his old one. So this would grow with a kid.
Right.
So it's be perfect.
You can stick it on the outside of your pack for carrying. At approximately 440 grams or roughly 1 pound.
Yeah, it's not too
bad.
It's
so lightweight. And the big thing is the price. $20 to $25.
Yeah.
Depending on where you get it from. For $20?
Yeah. It's too easy. It's a no-brainer.
Yeah. So I just saw these there and thought, you know, a little Fox 40 telescopic lightweight paddle.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be perfect for, like I say, for a lot of people that only bring the one or, yeah. you know, they bring two, but the other one never gets used because it's just in case mm-hmm. you break yours.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
This is perfect for something like that.
Yeah. And I like that it shrinks down.
Yeah.
So it's extendable. So you could pack it away easier or tuck it away easier so it's not in the way and you don't have this giant paddle. Because I usually jam it down along the packs on the side mm-hmm. of the canoe and the handle sticks up once in a while. It gets in the way and when I'm paddling and I whack the paddle I'm using off of it. And so it's something that can be tucked away and easily retrieved when you're on the go. If you're in some kind of calamity and you lose your paddle and so it's a great paddle. It looks mm-hmm. nice. It looks like a smaller version of a whitewater paddle.
Yeah. So Google the Fox 40 telescoping paddle.
Hmm. Very cool.
Yeah. I think for like $20, man.
I know.
Go pick one of them bad boys up. Okay. I also came across something else, which
I was supposed to watch the video and I didn't.
Shame on you. So it's an old article dating back to 2013. Part of me thought this was cool, and part of me thought this is how you die.
Here, hold my beer.
Hold my beer. I got an idea. So again, 2000, and I tried to find more. So everything seemed to end at 2013 yeah. with this thing.
Well, maybe the guy died.
No, he's still out there.
Is he?
Yeah. Olivier Foulet. His Subo kayak submarine, a working prototype developed around 2013 by a South African-based kayaking enthusiast to convert a standard kayak into a one-man, human-powered subsurface vessel. It was functional. He successfully created a working prototype that used a sealed hatch, a ballast tank for submersion, and a pedal-driven fishtail rudder for propulsion. The craft, often described as having a shark-like appearance, was designed for shallow, short-duration dives, approximately 2 to 3 hours.
Whoa, that long?
That's not a short
That's
duration.
A long dive.
Using a scuba cylinder for air and a CO2 filter.
Wow. Now I got to watch the video.
It was designed as an innovative stealth way to explore underwater, blending kayaking with submarine technology.
Navy SEALs use this, I bet.
That's probably why you've never seen it anywhere, right? They saw his video and then, hey, buddy.
Whoa.
Following the initial publicity in late 2013, the Subo remained a unique personal prototype rather than a commercially produced product. There have been no major widely reported updates on the commercialization or further development of the Subo project since that time. So, to say it looked... like a shark. No. You know what it sort of looked like? You know the front of the World War II propeller-driven jets? Like the Spitfires and stuff like that? Mm-hmm. Picture that without the propeller in the front. And the wings. And the tail. But keep the hatch.
Yeah.
Right? The canopy. I watched the video. It's a Frankenstein-looking kayak with a canopy that slides, folds over your head, and is latched closed. So you're sitting up in your kayak, you're paddling around, and all of a sudden, you know what? There's sea otters or whales out there. So you just lean back, you pull this canopy over your head, you break your kayak paddle around these. Slide on the top of the in under strings like you'd have on a regular kayak right now for storage. You latch this thing closed. You got your tank there for some sort of ballast tank system for going up and down. And everything's all closed. Woo, down you go. And there's, he's made these small round windows on each side of the where the hatch is. So you can see out.
It looks very science fiction-y.
Doesn't it? Doesn't it look like a jet fighter? It
looks like something Batman would ride in.
Right? Doesn't it look like a shark?
Mm-hmm.
Looks like a bat. You go from sitting upright to paddle as a kayak to leaning back, pulling the canopy, and you head down to become a submarine. So if you Google Subo, S-U-B-O, kayak... Lots comes up from 2013 videos and little chats about it and stuff like that. Not a ton of information, but at least you get a good view. It's a paddle thing, or sorry, a pedal thing.
How does he adjust the buoyancy?
It's got to be if you watch the video, there's the tanks he's got right in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be some sort of, and I don't know if it's just him or he rocks back and forth when he starts to go down.
Well, he's pedaling.
So that's what I'm wondering, is that what's, and is that, like with the rudder will get him left and right, but there must be some way that he's making it go up and down as well.
Yeah.
So that, they don't really explain in anything I've seen.
That's something.
But yeah, after 2013, nothing.
That's why I was asking, did he die?
Well, see, something like this, though, would be cool if you're paddling, like you get these people that are paddling. Over, you know, long distances. Well, it's all wavy on the surface. Well, I'm going to take a couple hours break and go below the surface. Hang out with the sharks and the whales.
That's wild.
And all of that. Yeah, definitely Google it. Google Subo or Subo kayak. And check out the videos of what it looks like.
It's going pretty deep.
Well, and see, he tows it behind his vehicle. And then he's got wheels on it to get it out into the... water.
Yeah.
So he wheels it right out on the water. I'm thinking, don't tell me he does this with the wheels on. But then you see him going underwater and yes. The wheels are gone. Yeah. So he, at some point, they just don't show it in the video, him taking it off the wheels.
That's pretty wild.
Right?
Huh.
But yeah, it's like an old airplane canopy or something.
Yeah.
And the little windows at the side. Like where your hips would be in a regular kayak.
So he's got a air tank, like a scuba diving air tank, and he's got a CO2 filter to help clear up CO2 that gets kept in there.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. That looks fun. And maybe a little bit dangerous.
I'm thinking a lot of it dangerous.
Yeah.
Like I say, part of me thought, hey, this is cool. Part of me thought, hey, this is how we die. Because realistically, if something craps out down there,
yeah,
that's all latched closed.
Yeah.
So no water leakage. And there's no, and you're cramped.
Yeah.
And you got to somehow, there's no spray skirt that you can pull.
Exactly. Yeah. Eject, eject.
Right? Nothing about what happens if it turns upside down or anything like that. Maybe he just ran out of money and interest. I don't know.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Maybe there could be a renewal. Like, he's got lots. It does look like a jet fighter canopy cockpit.
Kind of cool.
Uh-huh. Hmm. I like.
You're going to make one now. You're going to go make one. The only other thing I've got now is the outdoor shows.
Oh, yes, yes.
Got three of those coming up still out this week. That we tend to talk about anyway. I'm sure there's a few more little ones out there. Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show is coming up in a couple weeks.
Very close. It's coming up soon.
February 20th to 22nd. Definitely getting there for the Saturday. I'm not speaking this year. I took a year off. Just going to go wander around and, you know, do a few extra things. International Center Mississauga by the airport. Everything for fun and travel. Apparently, Newfoundland's got a...
Yeah, we went through...
Massive...
Went through all the...
The exhibitor vendors, list.
The exhibitor vendor list of all the booths and whatever is there, and there's like 30 of them from Newfoundland.
Yeah.
And it's all the different, like, little townships. There's one main Newfoundland booth, and then there's a whole bunch of smaller or shared booths for small towns or for hiking or kayaking adventures. Mm-hmm. And so it's a big section. So I guess Newfoundland's putting on a big push for tourism for this summer.
Something big must be going on there or something.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of speakers on the different stages, water demo pool to go see paddling demonstrations and all that sort of stuff. Outdooradventureshow.ca for more details. Again, the speaker list is now up. The vendor list of all the vendors that are going to be on the floor to go and check out their booths. That's up there right now as well. So go check it out. And again, if you go to that page, there's also links to the Vancouver, Calgary, and Montreal shows as well. Quiet Adventure Symposium, one of our favorite shows to attend, but unfortunately not going this year. Saturday, February 28th, it's the 31st annual symposium held at the Michigan State University Farm Bureau Pavilion in Lansing, Michigan, 9 till 5:30. quietadventures.org. Check out what they've got going there. We did a interview last, was that in the spring, with Peter Frank, Captain Peter Frank.
Yes.
Doing kayaking canoeing the Great Loop.
Yep.
He's supposed to be at
Is he going to be there?
At Quiet Adventure Symposium this year. So if you want to meet a really nice guy, young fella there.
He's awesome.
And hear his stories about his trip and all that, go check him out for sure. QuietAdventures.org. And don't forget to check out the Rabbit Show.
Yes, the Rabbit Show is always interesting. Show.
Cool. How much for a pound? They don't like that when you yell that. How much for a pound of rabbit?
How much does it cost per pound of rabbit meat?
And finally, Canoecopia, March 13th to 15th in Madison, Wisconsin at the Alliant Energy Center. Tons of speakers and vendors. There's so much information you can get from this show. It's unbelievable. I would say take all 3 days because there's so much to... Like I say, even if you didn't see the vendors on the floor and the exhibitors, yeah. Yep. You could just go from talk to talk to talk to talk.
Mm-hmm.
See all the presenters and everything and just your mind will be blown. Everything you need to know or want to know under one roof. Rutabaga.com/Canoecopia for more information or just Google Canoecopia and it'll come up. Easy peasy lemon squeezy. That's all I got this week. It was sort of a mishmash of a show, but, you know.
It's a mix. It's always a mix.
It's always a great little mix of little topics. You got anything else?
I've got no closing items.
And it's been getting really nice weather this week, and then this weekend it's supposed to drop again.
Oh, is it?
Why can't it be nice during the weekend when we can go out?
Exactly.
Paddling? And then you're, I mean, it's minus 13, 15 Celsius, so
yeah,
whatever that is in Fahrenheit. But still, you want to be out there. Mind you, this past weekend, everything's been sunshine, blue skies.
Oh, it's been nice.
It's been great. Yeah. But unfortunately, it's too busy to get out there this weekend. And then with a 3-foot ice drop, I just got to maybe bring an ice chisel and just chisel a little ramp in.
Just you just got to jump off.
Right? No, get somebody push you.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sitting in my boat. Now push. And whoom, out you go about 3 feet and boop.
Yeah, no problem.
That's
it'll go well.
It'll work perfectly, just like it happens in my head.
Yeah.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong? All right, nothing else, bud?
Nothing else.
Okie dokie. Well, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream all our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com to stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.